Let me tell you a story. About 13 or 12 years ago, we were working with the navigators in Uganda. And one night after a typically busy day, I was sitting in my comfortable chair in the bedroom, and Carla came and said to me, she said, you know, Jeff, you're really busy. You know, you're just running around meeting so many people's needs. And you're doing so much. She said, but you know, I have needs. And we have needs. And, you know, I'm just wondering, who meets our needs? Who meets your needs? Now, on the outside, I said, well, that's really a good question. But on the inside, I was thinking, needs? I can't think of any needs I have. I'm not interested in needs. I don't know about needs. What? I mean, I know I have some weaknesses. The Bible tells me so I must have some weaknesses. But I don't know about needs. I'm not really all that concerned about my needs. And, of course, I wasn't really all that concerned about her needs either. So I said, that's a really important question and a good question. I said, but you know, Mark 10:45, Jesus came to serve. He didn't come to be served. He came to serve, to lay down his life. And I said, you know, that's what we're called to. And I know sometimes we, you know, it feels like we don't get needs met. But you know, that's really our calling, and it's right for us to meet other people's needs. That's what I feel like God wants me to do. Carla said, well, help me to understand something. If it's not right for you to have your needs met, why is it right for another person to have their needs met by you? Isn't it also wrong for them to have their needs met by you? And she said, plus, that's not what that verse means. She said, Jesus didn't come into the world changing his own nappies, preparing his own meals, collecting some spending money to buy his own clothes. And she said, what about that woman at the well when Jesus said, asked her for a drink of water? Or what about that thing in Luke 8 where those women traveled with Jesus and supported him out of their own resources? She said, that's not what that verse means, that you just always meet someone else's needs and your needs are never met. Well, again, on the outside, I said, you know, that is really an important point. I don't know if I've ever thought about that. But on the inside, I thought, that is a terrible question. And that is a frightening comment. And I don't have any idea what this means. But I know that the questions that she's asking and the comments she's making are speaking about something that I know nothing about, I don't think I've ever experienced, and I'm not really interested in learning anything about it. And so in my mind, I thought the most important thing I can do right now is to, as quickly and completely as possible, steer this conversation away from this topic and get onto something which I feel better about. And so I did. I employed some very fancy linguistic jujitsu, and before you know it, the conversation was over here, and off we went. But little did I know that those comments and questions of my hurting wife would define and frame some of the major lessons that God had for me over the next decade. And I was able to steer that conversation away at that point in time. But I was unable to dodge God on the issues. So I'd like to just share this morning a few thoughts about love and grace expressed among us in community, and also one rather nagging, uncomfortable question that I have. It seems to me that when we talk about love and grace expressed among us in community, we're talking basically about a way of life where personal and corporate needs are met. God was the originator of love and grace. Donald made a wonderful comment yesterday that the creation into which God put us is like a capital account upon which we draw. God is the one who has given himself and his resources to us to meet basic needs we have of life and existence, as well as the great need we have for forgiveness. It seems to me that this idea of grace and love is profound and supernatural, and yet also somewhat simple. Jesus Christ expressed grace and love by going to the cross. But you know, Jesus Christ also expressed grace and love by walking up to the house of a sinful man and removing his shoes and walking over and sitting down at a table and eating some food. Pretty basic, seems to me. But the profound and supernatural thing about grace and love is that God does this to us even though he doesn't have to, and even when it doesn't make sense. I mean, that's part of what we sang this morning, isn't it? How is this? The older hymn than this newer one. You know, amazing love, how can it be that thou, my God, wouldst die for me? It just doesn't make sense. It's supernatural. It's profound. It's the reality of the fact that the general grace of God, which is given to every one of us, the ecosystem in which we exist, sustains the life of a Mother Teresa and an Adolf Hitler. It's amazing, isn't it? But that's what love and grace is. And it seems to me, in a community where love and grace is expressed, it's a community where needs are met, where resources are exchanged freely and willingly, even though we don't necessarily have to, and even times when it doesn't make a lot of sense. Dallas Willard put it well, the grace of God is God accomplishing in us what we cannot accomplish for ourselves. It's a great working definition, isn't it? Love and grace are common in the sense that you find these words throughout the scriptures, and yet sometimes it's hard to get a hold of. But in a very basic sense, that's what we're talking about, isn't it? A value that says love and grace expressed among us in community seems to be a value that speaks to the free and willful offering and receiving of the resources of one another. Now, there's a general grace of God and love of God that everybody experiences every day. There's also some places, however, where it seems as if love and grace are concentrated and amplified to some degree. I mean, we know that God gives grace to the humble, from James, for instance. And 2 Corinthians 9 talks about God giving grace and good works. But just a few places that God has really impressed upon my heart over the last few years, where grace and love are concentrated and amplified and unleashed in a very significant way. One, Romans 5:20. Where sin abounds, grace abounds all the more. Isn't that something? A community of love and grace seems to me to be a place where I can find partnership and help, protection and restoration in dealing with my sin. Now, community and love and grace is not just a description of sort of a society for mutual consolation. You know what that's like? That's like Lee and I, we meet on the street, and he says, well, how are you doing? And I said, well, okay, but you know, I'm struggling with sin, and I'm so angry, and I just, and Lee says, oh, boy, are you? You're angry, huh? You know, I'm angry. I'm angry about this, and I've been struggling with this sin and I'm angry. And I said, oh, you're angry too. And all of a sudden we start to have a mutual consolation society where we find somehow encouragement and unity in our sinfulness. That's not what this is talking about. A place where love and grace is expressed in community is not a place where we come together around sin. That's not unity. That's not community. That's not health. That is illness. Okay? But it is a place where we come to find help from one another and from Jesus Christ. And where we help one another to go to Him. Another interesting place to me that I've spent a lot of time thinking about is 2 Corinthians 12. Paul's thorn in the flesh. And this is a very interesting thing because Paul says, I have this weakness and I asked God to take it away. And He didn't take it away. But He taught me something else. And that is, my grace is sufficient in weakness. There is something about weakness that brings the concentrated grace of God and unleashes it in ways that influence and affect our entire life. And there's a sense in which, as Paul expresses this in 2 Corinthians 12, it's almost like there's a consecration of my weakness. It's like the sin thing. It's not, well, I'm so weak and so on and so forth, but Lord, I am weak and here it is, and please, please, do what this verse says. Concentrate and bring and focus your grace of God on this in a way that not only helps me to overcome and live through and with the weakness that I have, but in all of the other trials and issues of life. And then another interesting place where the grace of God seems to come together, Romans 15. And one that is very, very interesting to me. Paul says this. He says, I've written to you quite boldly on some points as if to remind you of them again. Because of the grace God gave me to be a minister of Christ Jesus to the Gentiles with the priestly duty of proclaiming the gospel of God so that the Gentiles might become an offering acceptable to God, sanctified by the Holy Spirit. Now, one of the things that I've noticed over the last few years is I've just shared a little bit about love and grace with people. Is a common response from many people. And they say, you know, this is a good idea. But if we practice this, if we spend time doing this, we're not going to get anything done. We're going to spend all of our time sitting around with one another, encouraging and holding hands and singing Kumbaya and other things like this. We're not going to get any work done. Well, the grace of God is concentrated and unleashed in helping us to accomplish our God-given purpose. And if you or I are part of a community in which there is not the affirmation and the application of our divine design as individuals and in a corporate sense, we are not practicing love and grace in the context of a community. Because love and grace says we're important and God made us for a purpose. And that all of us individually, at one point in our lives, will stand before Jesus Christ and we would all like to hear, well done, good and faithful servant. Wouldn't we? And we are all under the obligation to understand, why, God, did you make me the way that I am? And what do you want me to do? And the truth of the matter is, without involvement and connection with people, in a context of love and grace, we will have great difficulty at best in understanding and experiencing and applying who we are that God made us to be. We just can't do it alone. And of course, we have a wonderful example in the scriptures with the Apostle Paul, who experienced the grace of God in fulfilling his purpose, but in the context of a wide group of people. One of my favorites is Romans 16, where Paul is sending greetings to people. And he thanks Rufus, sending greetings to Rufus, and also to Rufus's mother, who was a mother to me. This is an amazing statement by this great man of faith and vision and missions and so on. A man who was not afraid to admit the fact that sometimes he needed a mother. And that here was a woman who provided that for him. I mean, isn't that something? That's amazing. But it was something that was required for him to fulfill and accomplish what God gave him to do. Well, another little lesson is love and grace is a two-way street. Now, for most of my Christian experience, I thought love and grace was a one-way street. I needed to express it and give it and share it with everybody else. Well, then I told you this story and I started to learn something. And then I was at a period of time when I thought love and grace is like a dual carriageway. You know, dual carriageway. That's where you have two nice lanes going in this direction. Then you have a big piece of grass in the middle. And then you have two lanes going in this direction. You know, quite nice. You know, this goes and this goes and you don't get all mixed up. But in actual fact, it seems to me that love and grace expressed in community is much more like a two-way street that is under constant construction. It's always under construction. And you know what it's like to drive through a construction zone. You have dust and holes and diversions and delays and et cetera and so on. About 3 weeks ago, Randy Torpin and I were sitting in a rather musty hotel in Tashkent. It was 7 o'clock in the morning and we were talking about a number of things. And I asked Randy if I could share this story, so don't feel uncomfortable. Anyway, we were talking about a number of things, and as we talked, something was triggered in my mind that I had stored away that I wanted to share with Randy, with some observation and some conclusion I had drawn. So as we're sitting there talking, I made this statement to Randy and said, you know, Randy, I've noticed there's this and this and this and so on and so forth. And almost immediately, Randy's sort of hung his head, and he went like this. And he said, Jeff, that is not true. I'm not like that. That isn't me. And he said, but the thing is, you have this way of communicating, like, you know, God just asked you for advice, and you told him, now you're telling me. Right? My wife is saying, yeah. And now you're telling me. And he said, that is not true. I'm not like that. And so, you know, in these kinds of situations, the parallel circuits in your mind, those things that you have can handle many thoughts at once, you know, they're going like this. So in my mind, I'm thinking, oh, no. Why did I have to say that? Why couldn't I have just kept talking about some other people? Or the ministry, or at least even the Bible. Why did I have to say that? Then the second thing I thought was, it's only 7 o'clock. We've got 2 hours before our next appointment. What am I going to do sitting here with a man that I've offended and he's hurting? No, I mean, this is just... Now, I know that doesn't happen to you, but I mean, this is just what happens inside. And then I'm thinking, I'm running through the files in my mind thinking, now what is it that I'm supposed to say that will show Randy that I'm mature and I you know, I handle these kinds of situations right? Well, what are those words I'm supposed to say when you forgive me? You know, like this. Well, so you know, this is all going on up here. So then God speaks to my heart. He says, Jeff, listen, you just messed up. And you need my love. And you need my grace and you need my forgiveness. And I've already given it to you. But do you think you could just be man enough to ask Randy to extend the same to you? And I thought, oh, Lord, I don't know if I can or not. But I'll try. So I said, from my heart, not from the files of my mind, but from my heart, I said, Randy, I'm really sorry. You're right. I do talk like this. I do. And you know that my mouth is an area of weakness. It just is. And it gets me into trouble. And I'm deeply sorry. And please forgive me and help me. And we had a talk of about 15 minutes, 20 minutes sitting there. And then we went on to something else. But the amazing thing was, we had, not necessarily the best time, but we had a very wonderful time of ministry together over the next several days. I don't know if we accomplished anything, but I do know that it was extremely enjoyable. And the presence of God we felt. And so this idea of love and grace, it's a two-way street that's always under construction. It doesn't work like this or like this all the time. Well, one nagging question I'm left with. John 13, 34 and 35. John 15, John 17. There seems to be a direct connection between love and grace and the movement and growth of the gospel message. I mean, Jesus said it very plain. By this all men will know that you are my disciples if you have love for one another. In John 17, the same thing. People will understand the truth of me. People will be drawn to the person of me somehow in this. But I have to confess, this is a huge question. I'm like the man personally who said, yeah, I believe, but help my unbelief. I don't know how it works. I don't know if I've ever seen it work. I don't think it means that, you know, as I'm having my neighborhood small group from my church studying the Bible, that, you know, my neighbor knocks on the door and says, Jeff, I've just noticed this love and grace expressed in community so much. Could you baptize me into the faith right now? I don't think that's what it means. But there is something in this that draws people. And I would love to know and understand it better. So we have this statement. Love and grace expressed among us in community. It's, I think, a prescription on how we can live. And it's also a description of a life that we can live with others in which we can find safety, protection, and partnership. Seems to be a life from which we can serve with great confidence and security. Intensity, intentionality. And it seems to be a description of a life that draws other people to Jesus Christ.